Okay, I'm gonna call the meeting to order. Couple minutes late, 6:04. It's the September 30th meeting of the Balboa Reservoir Community Action, Community Advisory Committee. Call to order, opening of meeting. Where are the minutes? Need to get the minutes approved. Need some staff. Okay, how about a roll call or roll? Maurice Rivers?
Here.
Mark Tang?
Here.
Amy O'Hare?
Here.
Howard Chun? Absent. Robert Mulbauer?
Here.
Michael Aaronz?
Here.
Christine Dunnemis?
Here.
Bridget Davila?
Present.
Davila, is it Davila?
Davila.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
And I'm John Liston, so one absent, Howard Chun. Anybody wanna give me a motion to approve the minutes?
I'm sorry, where are the minutes?
The minutes were on the table down there when I got up.
Is it copy of the minutes?
Are you ready for my comments? First, I think the staff did a good job of setting forth all the city staff and other members present that are not committee members, but I think they should, and they had Jeannie Poling there, and she made a major presentation. And Dr. James Son made a major presentation, who's here with us tonight. And I think on the first page we should recognize that also present was the CCSF Vice Chancellor of Business, Dr. James Son. That's comment number one. And then comment number two on page 2 of 9, where you have paragraph 3, the draft environmental impact report update. I think it should recognize that that was given by Jeannie Poling, because she made a very good presentation, and it should be noted there. The next comment that I have is on...
I'm sorry, I don't have a comment.
Yeah, I don't either.
Yeah, and neither do we.
There's no minutes on the table.
No, the copies are gone.
I got them offline tonight, this afternoon.
Is there anybody in the audience that would want to share?
I took a copy off, oh, I have an extra copy here that I took off the table.
Yeah, I'll try to find it online.
I have an extra copy here that I got, I'm reading from my copy that I got offline, online. Okay, should I start again, or should I keep it? Okay. The next comment I have is on page 5, where it says updates from City College. I think you should recognize that the presenter was Dr. James Son. And then the other comment I have is that I complimented the new taker of minutes previously when they accurately reflected all the comments of each of the presenters in the minutes themselves. But this time I don't see those comments, and I think we should go back to the tape and make sure we capture the comments of all of the interested parties who come here so that we can have them recorded in the minutes. The only thing that the drafter of this minutes did was say comment and see following pages. And in many cases, you just had the name of the person without any comment whatsoever. And that's the first time I've seen that, so I think we need to reflect in the minutes, as we've done since I've been on this in 2016, the comments of the public. Pardon me? No, if you look at those, I gave my only copy away. Scroll down. Many times there's no comments on those whatsoever. And like it says, Anita Thea Harris, she made her comment publicly. And what they did previously, the city did a very good job of giving, like, Anita supports this, or this commenter supports that. But there's nothing. And many of these, all they did is they put on the signature cards, and many of them had no comments whatsoever. So I think to document the comments of the public, which is extremely important, the minutes should reflect that. So I suggest going forward we do that. And also, previously I suggested that the name of the person be there, and at the last minutes that was there, there were very good minutes for the last meeting. So I think this time we have to go back, somebody has to listen to the tape and record the comments of the people who were in the audience. The comments, I have no comments on the comments from the CAC, they were accurately reflected. And each of us said various things, I said things, and other people said things. That was accurately recorded. I think the same thing should be done with the public.
Did you get those friendly amendments, Sheila? Oh, by the way, Sheila's here. She's, we have two people out today from staff. Lee is having a baby and so is Sung. She was substituting for Lee and who's substituting for Lee? I mean for Sung, and Lee is being substituted by nobody, which is why we're a little lost.
Yeah, we're a little short-staffed in Houston.
Yeah. Any other comments on the minutes? Quickly. Anybody from the public? Okay.
I think we should defer approval of minutes if we see the minutes with the public comments on them.
Okay. Well, you know, there is, we made a decision a few meetings back to keep the minutes, not be verbatim with the minutes. But maybe we need to have a little more detail, a little more detail. But there are recordings online, and the recordings have been altered these, the last few meetings where we actually have them separated by item number. So they're not too difficult to sit through if you want to actually hear verbatim.
But still, we need at least a,
but still, I think we all agree, don't we? We need something said about the comment, even just a line.
Okay.
Do you agree on that?
I agree. Right. Not verbatim, but maybe a little more fleshed out.
Question.
Comment from the public.
My name is Harry Burke.
There you go.
My name is Harry Bernstein. I agree wholeheartedly with Mr. Ahrens. There's no reason to publicly reveal the personal information from the comment card, but there is necessity to have the comments, at least in some fashion. Just have a, on the very, it's page 7 of 9, Ms. Aaron said, the parking issue must be resolved, the BRCAC parameters shall not be violated. Is there any force of law or anything behind whether the parameters can be violated? Is that just, is it an opinion, or is there anything behind that? And would this group act to make sure that that is true?
I'll get back to you on that.
Okay.
I have no idea. Okay, item number, anybody else want to speak?
Can I speak?
Yes, please.
So I'm Sue Exline with the Planning Department staff, and I just wanted to kind of remind everybody that we do have staff filling in tonight. So Sheila, as everybody mentioned, is just here tonight, first time, and so we are going to have to everybody be a little more patient with kind of note-taking and minutes and everything. And so we really do need to make sure that everybody fills one of these out whenever they make a comment.
Yes.
So if I can ask you to do that so we can track everything. So these are here, and they're over there as well.
Yeah, I neglected to say, we are doing comment cards the last two meetings. So fill out a comment card if you'd like to speak and bring it to
you can set it right at Sheila's table.
I was just wondering if the comment cards, if people fill them out more completely, because I noticed a lot of them just had a name and maybe the subject. That way their comments actually get in there.
Did everybody hear that?
No.
When you fill out your comment card, please put your comment on the comment card. It'll make note-taking a little bit easier. Okay. Any more public comment on the comments? Okay, seeing none. We'll go to item number 3, the annual
report. I'll second that motion.
We have a motion to defer approval of the minutes and a second till the next meeting. Anybody want to vote yes or no? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Unanimous?
Yes.
Okay.
Bless you.
Item 3, the annual report, which is not available for anybody to read, so I don't really know how to deal with that. I put together an annual report. It's been sent out to the members of the committee, and it's basically my prerogative to submit it to the mayor and to the Board of Supervisors, but I wanted to bring it out here to discuss, and I don't really know how we're going to discuss it without everybody having a copy of it.
So,
Bridget, can you use the mic, please?
On page 4, I think it is, where it's urban design and neighborhood character, and
part of it has been struck out and new text added. It says the new text says the project has deviated from the 65 foot height limit prescribed in the principles and parameters. Because it was originally prescribed in the, as opposed to proscribed.
Good question. I'm not really sure how that works. I wrote that, but.
Well, I was thinking it could mean proscribed, but I wasn't sure about that.
Principles and parameters called for 65.
Yeah, so I think it would be prescribed.
Can you use
in there.
The mic, please?
I am using the mic.
Can I make a comment? Did you want to respond to hers with the mic? Prescribed?
Do you have a better word to use?
Prescribed.
Okay, prescribed. Change that.
You wanted to limit this to 10 minutes, and so my comments would be more than 10 minutes, so I have a suggestion. I think you did a good job, but I think there should be other things that should be included in this. And I would, and I have wording comments, but they would probably take more than 10 minutes if all of us talked about it. I suggest we do what we did last time when we had this annual report in 2016, when we try to get one done. I would be happy to give to the whole board, or to you, to make sure we don't violate the Brown Act, my red line comments after this meeting. And then, rather than have a special meeting, I see no need to get this done before the next December meeting, because there's going to be, the CEQA process is still going on. There's no need for an annual report to the Board of Supervisors before December. So I would suggest that everybody give to you as the chair their red line comments, and then you can use your discretion whether you distribute it before the next meeting. That would probably be the best.
Okay.
And then we have copies for all the public to look at, and they can comment on it, then would be appropriate.
Excellent. All
right. I'm just curious from members of the public, if you have seen the report that was prepared, if you just give me a quick show of hands. Okay, this is a problem in my mind. This is what we're here for. We are this committee and reporting to the Board of Supervisors the activities of this committee. And I think this is as important, getting public comment on it and flushing that out so that the layman's perspective on this gets adequately communicated to our elected representatives. So maybe tonight what we do is if there's some initial comments from the committee, we could take that here, and then at the next meeting we will have that package included in the electronic package that goes with the agenda, as well as copies of it present at the meeting so people can be looking at it as further comments are made. But again, it's an important document, and it's the first time we've put one together. So let's be thorough about it and put the time into it so that those perspectives and sentiments are adequately heard.
I would be happy in 2 minutes with my comments.
Can you use the mic, please?
I would be happy in 2 minutes to give my comments, but if you don't accept Robert's suggestion, I'd be happy to do it in writing as long as the public can see my comments in advance of the next meeting. That probably is more efficient.
Sounds good. Amy, did you have something to add? Okay. Also, I want to let the record reflect, I just saw Howard Chung just walked in, so he's present. Yeah, okay, so I will pass the annual report on to the other members of the committee. I will take suggestions, make friendly amendments when necessary and when possible, and pass them back and have some comment that doesn't violate the Brown Act, and then we will present it to the public in December.
And you will correct? Present the comments of the committee members.
Okay.
That's
okay.
That's a yes.
I'm going to go yes on that.
Thank you.
All right.
Do you need a motion to approve?
No, because it's not really an action item. No comment from the public on this? Okay, good. Let's go to the transportation. This is the most important part of the meeting tonight, is the transportation element of this project. The whole project won't work unless we can get to the people who live there can actually get home and get to work, and students from City College need to be able to get to class. And this is what we're here to discuss tonight. So the item number 4, Balboa Reservoir Transportation, is a discussion item. And we have a presentation from cities and sponsor on transportation related items. Someone from the city.
Okay, good evening, everyone. Again, Sue Exline from the Planning Department staff. And I am just going to open up the presentation tonight. We have a really, hopefully, thorough and comprehensive, and a lot of folks here from the city and the sponsor to present. So just to kind of tell you what we're going to do, Carly Payne from SFMTA staff is here. She's going to open it up with an introduction and some background and policies on transportation planning. Next, Wade Woodgrove from the Environmental Planning Division in the Planning Department is going to talk about the CEQA analysis that was done on the transportation piece. The sponsor, Joe Kirchhoffer, and the team Kittleson will present the non-CEQA supplemental analysis, so the supplemental analysis that was outside of the CEQA work. Finally, MTA staff, Mark Drager and Michael Rhodes will come back and present on improvements specific to this area. So we'll just get started with Carly. Thanks.
Good evening, Chair Winston, members of the CLC. I'm Carly Payne. I represent the SFMTA on land use development projects such as this one. And my role tonight is really to provide a context for how we think about transportation and what we've heard about transportation issues specific to this project, and really what the transportation context is. So, in San Francisco, there are several foundational policies that guide our transportation planning work, our transportation policy and project work. Vision Zero, which is the city's road safety commitment and policy. It's our goal of reaching zero traffic fatalities by the year 2024. Our Transit First policy, which says that transit, walking, and biking are the preferred modes in San Francisco, and those shall be prioritized. And our climate policy that says that by 2030, we're aiming for 80% of all trips made in San Francisco to be made by sustainable modes. Over the past few years, working with the CAC and through the development process and even before this developer was selected, we've heard a number of things from the community. We want to really reflect back regarding transportation. First, we already are experiencing a lot of congestion in the area, in particular at intersections along Ocean Avenue, that there's the walk between this site, City College, and the reservoir site and the Balboa Station doesn't feel safe and inviting to many people. There are concerns that there will be more traffic coming into the Sunnyside neighborhood. There are concerns that Balboa Reservoir residents and City College faculty and staff and students won't have enough parking, and they'll start parking in neighborhood streets, so there will be spillover parking. And there's concerns that the transformation of the reservoir site from its current parking use to other uses is going to have negative impacts on the City College population. So those are the key things that we've heard over the last few years, and I want to make sure that everyone knows we've heard them and we're thinking about them. At the same time, we're really faced in this area with some constraints in our transportation system. There are that we really have to be cognizant of as we think about what kind of improvements are possible. So there are a lot of competing uses on Ocean Avenue. We've heard from folks that people want traffic to move smoother, less traffic congestion and delay, and that transit should be more reliable and go more quickly on Ocean Avenue. And we should have safer walking and also biking conditions on Ocean Avenue. And Ocean Avenue is a really limited right-of-way. And so when we think about what can we do to advance any of those interests, there are going to be trade-offs. And that's just the truth, and so we want to be honest about that. This neighborhood, the streets in this area are not designed as a grid, which means that when you prioritize one mode on your main arterial of Ocean Avenue, there's not a series of parallel and perpendicular streets to put the to prioritize the other modes. And you also can't get around challenges by an easy series of right turns like you might in some other neighborhoods. We have a highway off-ramp that is not under city jurisdiction, it's Caltrans jurisdiction. And there's also a limited right-of-way for the over the highway overcrossing. And City College, City College is a major trip generator. It also has a front on Ocean Avenue that it controls. So those are some of the constraints. The good news is that SFMTA has already put in place various improvements that are hopefully making the transportation system somewhat better, and my next slide will list a number of those. And second, this Balboa Reservoir planning process has really accelerated some conversations and some projects that I don't think would have been moving forward on this timeline absent the conversation around this development. And I'll give you two key examples. One is the city has really advanced its relationship with City College. And City College now has a different way of thinking about its parking. It has developed a transportation demand management plan, which, if adopted by its board, will put in place a number of programs and amenities and incentives to support faculty and staff and students getting to and from City College in ways that reduce driving. And their plan has a quantifiable ability to reduce driving trips from the City College project. The Balboa Reservoir project is also proposing 150 units of educator housing, which certainly would reduce the driving trips from some folks for City College. And then from the MTA side, we have advanced two projects, which you'll hear more about from my colleagues later this evening, that probably wouldn't have been coming up at this point in time. Muni Forward for the K Line and an Ocean Avenue safety project. And the other thing I wanna mention is we've heard questions in the past about, so how is MTA going to be making sure that you're acknowledging this growth in how you plan for service and transit service. So I want to share with you how we do that. We have a fleet plan, which is our midterm plan for the bus and rail vehicles that we purchase and how they're deployed on different lines. And one of the key inputs into this fleet plan is anticipated growth by geography and kind of correlated to different lines. And so the growth for any of these major development projects like Balboa Reservoir, but also things like Park Merced, Hunters Point Shipyard, those become inputs and help to drive what the fleet capacity we need is. And then those lead to decisions and operating budgets to be able to provide the service. And so I wanted to make sure that you all know that we are thinking ahead. And we have, as part of the way that we do our business, integrating the growth throughout the city, including a project such as this one. Excellent. So this is a list of recent transportation and street improvements in the area that the city has implemented, or plans that we've started. Many of them are SFMTA, some are not. Some are from our sister city departments. My colleagues, Mark Drager and Michael Rhodes, will talk about two particular studies that we're embarking on later in the program that will provide additional transportation benefits to this neighborhood in particular. What's not on this slide are the system-wide improvements that we are making that will benefit not just transit in this neighborhood, but transit across the city. In particular, our core capacity improvements, such as automated train control that will help improve reliability, reduce delays, make smoother rides on the light rail system, and all of our facilities expansion and improvements. Right now, often we have to send fleet vehicles out of San Francisco for them to be repaired. We want to be able to do all of that repair and accommodate our growing fleet here in San Francisco. And so we're expanding our facilities to do that. And that doesn't sound super exciting, but what it means is that we're not going to have to wait for a vehicle to travel somewhere else, get fixed, and come back for it to be back in service and fill the gaps that might have existed while it was out being repaired. And it will also allow us to do preventative maintenance here in San Francisco to get out ahead of some of those issues. So that's what I have for you. I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Wade Whitgriff, from the Planning Department to talk about transportation and CEQA.
Thank you, Carly. Good evening. As Carly mentioned, my name is Wade Whitgriff. I work at the Planning Department. Transportation is my favorite topic, and CEQA on top of that is even more exciting. So thank you for having me here. So I managed the Transportation Review and the Environmental Review for Balboa Reservoir. With me is also Liz White in the back. She worked on the transportation analysis. And I'm just going to quickly summarize what the CEQA transportation analysis covered and its conclusions. But before I do that, I just want to remind everyone that there is a formal process that goes on through CEQA. So the public comment period on the draft EIR closed last week. We had a number of comments about transportation. We will be spending the next few months reviewing those comments, responding to them formally, and we expect to provide a formal response in the spring. So with CEQA, as a starting point, we use guidelines that our department produces. It's called the Transportation Impact Analysis Guidelines. And within those guidelines, it outlines the different topics that we cover in CEQA for any project, so not just this project. And we comprehensively updated those guidelines for the first time this year in 17 years. And this was a two-year process that we went through with sister agencies, regional agencies, our commission, on what methodology, what criteria we should use, what topics we should cover. And we also collected data at new development sites throughout San Francisco that estimate the number of trips and the type of trips that new developments generate. So all that sort of analysis went into this project, and I can confidently state that our guidelines are the most robust in the state. Nowhere else in California is analyzing the topics that we analyze for the most part in CEQA. And so the topics that we do cover, there are six topics. The first two relate to safety and accessibility impacts to people walking, bicycling, etc. We look at transit delay impacts, for example, on Muni. We look at whether a project has adequate loading on site, and if not, what are the secondary effects on the transportation system. Cut off a little bit here is we look at vehicle miles traveled. This is really a measure of the transportation efficiency of a project in relation to the overall region, and as well as its greenhouse gas emissions. And then we also look at the temporary effects a project would have on the transportation system due to its construction. We also, for these topics, look at the combined or cumulative effects of the project with other known projects nearby, so Balboa Reservoir and City College, for example. And we analyze those six topics in a study area and study intersections, and we analyze the change that the project would cause to those topics. So for example, we looked at the total delay that would happen to the 43 Masonic from the project within our entire study area. So not just between two stops, but across the corridors that the 43 travels. And of those six topics that we looked at in CEQA, we found that the project would not have significant impacts on four of those six. And by significant, I mean a substantial adverse change in that existing physical environment in the study area. Next slide. But we found that the project would have significant and what's called unavoidable impacts in two topics. One topic relates to loading along potential conflicts with loading and existing conditions along Lee Avenue due to the project's extension of Lee Avenue and the project vehicle trips. And the second is combined or cumulative impacts to transit with City College. And we call this, we use the term unavoidable, and that doesn't mean we don't have solutions. We think we actually have pretty good solutions to mitigate those impacts, but there's really two reasons that we use the term unavoidable. One is we're not absolutely certain that they will be in place or they will work, so we conservatively call it unavoidable. And the second is some of the measures are reliant on another agency like SFMTA taking an action that the Planning Commission doesn't have authority over. So that could be measures along Ocean Avenue, for example. So that is a really, really quick summary of what the CEQA transportation analysis covered. CEQA is just one very important piece for the Planning Commission to consider when, whether or not to approve the project, but there's lots of other pieces of information that CEQA can cover, and were covered, some of these other issues were covered in a supplemental analysis, so I'm going to turn it over to, I think, Joe to talk about that.
Thank you, Wade. So I'm Joe Kirchhoffer with the project team. I am mostly just here to introduce Amanda, but we want to make it really clear. So as many of you will recall, there have been concerns in prior meetings from this committee and from the public about, we want to hear about some of the topics that are not covered in CEQA. We want to have some technical analysis of some of those topics that are not covered in CEQA. So we said in the past,
Joe,
we'll...
I need you to slow down, please.
Sorry about that.
Thank you.
We have said in the past that we will study those topics and we'll come back with technical analysis. And so that's what Amanda's firm, Kittleson, has prepared. It is not part of CEQA, but we asked them to study impacts to parking, impacts to automobile traffic, and the feasibility and how a shuttle would work in this context. And so they've done that. I think many of you have seen that study. It is not, as I said, it's not going to be part of CEQA, but it is part of the project's public record. It is part of the sort of the project file, and it is, although it's not eligible to be part of CEQA, it is eligible to be considered by the decision makers, the Planning Commission, the Board of Supervisors that are making decisions on this project. So, so without further ado, take a look.
Thank you, Joe. I think you just stole my first slide there. So I'm Amanda Leahy with Kittleson and Associates, and we prepared the non-CEQA transportation analysis for this project. The purpose was really to provide an evaluation of transportation topics that are not covered in CEQA, and those are the shuttle feasibility and operations, the parking supply and demand, and vehicle traffic operations. And so I'll talk through those three topics. For shuttle operations and feasibility, the purpose of this study was really to evaluate the potential for a shuttle operating between the Balboa Reservoir site and the BART station. And so we looked at a potential route. We identified potential stops. We evaluated the number of riders that could take this shuttle, as well as the cost of the service. And we found that really this shuttle service would be redundant with existing uni lines that currently operate. And we felt that the cost at over $1 million annually could be spent in alternative ways, such as providing subsidized first last mile trips to BART, or helping to fund some of the infrastructure investments along Ocean Avenue. We also looked at the parking supply and demand analysis. So the purpose of this was twofold. First, we wanted to understand the project's impact on parking. And to do this, we collected parking supply and utilization data of the upper lot and the lower lot. and we calculated the demand for parking generated by the two project options. So on the left, you can see the 1,100 dwelling unit scenario, and on the right, the 1,550 dwelling unit scenario. And we found that during the overnight period, there would be a shortfall of about 100 spaces in the 1,550 dwelling unit scenario, but the proposed supply would exceed the estimated demand in the 1,100 dwelling unit scenario during both the midday and overnight periods. So also for parking, was there one slide that, okay, well, we can stay on this slide, and I'll also mention that we also looked at the effect of removing the City College lot. So we use the same parking supply and inventory, there we go, parking supply and demand analysis. And we took the lower lot demand and added it to the upper lot demand. And we found that with development on the lower lot, there would be a shortfall of about 240 parking spaces during the midday peak period, unless there is a parking garage open to the public on the Balboa Reservoir site. So I'll also add that both of these scenarios assumed there was no public parking allowed on the Balboa Reservoir site. Okay, and then for vehicle traffic operations, we evaluated the existing and with project operations along the major north-south and east-west corridors. So that's Ocean Avenue and then Ridgewood and Frida Kahlo Way. And we also looked at select study intersections. So those are circled in the bottom, Ocean and Brighton, Ocean and Lee, and Ocean and Frida Kahlo. And we took a conservative approach and looked at the WIF project, assuming the 1,550 unit scenario was built. And we found that overall, the vehicle trips generated under this scenario are not anticipated to substantially increase delays along either corridor during the weekday AM or PM peak hours. In the intersection analysis, we found that the project would result in minor changes, so that means less than 5 second change in delay at Ocean and Brighton or Ocean and Lee during the AM or PM peak hours. But that at Ocean and Frida, an intersection that I'm sure you all have experienced, operates with pretty high levels of delay currently, with the addition of project trips. In the westbound direction in the PM peak hour particularly, the project could contribute delays of around 70 seconds. But just keeping in mind that for intersections already operating at this level of delay, any addition in traffic has an exponential effect on delay. And also keeping in mind that the 1,100 unit scenario would have fewer trips and result in less delay. So we also looked at potential modifications. So we evaluated signal timing modifications at intersections along the corridor to see if reallocation of green time, for example, increasing the signal timing at some intersections could be beneficial to vehicle travel times and reduce delay. And we identified some other potential modifications like installation of left or right turn lanes, implementation of turn movement restrictions, and intersection redesigns that could have potential benefits. But like Carly mentioned in the intro slide, there is a very constrained right-of-way and some other trade-offs that would need to be considered. So just keeping that in mind, we found that overall the signal timing modifications could slightly reduce delay, but they could have other trade-offs like increasing pedestrian wait times at crossings, for example. So that's all I have to share with you right now.
And
And I am going to do a quick overview of the on-site transportation. I'm Peter Waller with Biotalk. We can go on to the next slide. And folks are familiar with the work we've been doing on site to really make this place walkable, to support this shared goal of 80% sustainable trips by 2030. So everything is oriented towards walking and biking, calming traffic. Next slide is fine. Really for us, it's that qualitative piece where when you step out your door, walking is the obvious choice. Things are active, you've got greenery, it's safe, it's inviting. That's the choice you want to make, all respects on site. And that the pedestrian way really connects to the right places. We have four connections to Ocean Avenue. We have three over to Frida Kahlo. There is, on the next slide, a very clear bike network. Basically, we take that network of slow streets and make those sharrows and then connect out to the larger bike network. We're providing on-site bike share, a significant amount of bike parking, both public and on-site. Next slide. And then we've been developing the details, really, of traffic calming, raised pedestrian crossings, narrowing of streets, raised circles at intersections to slow folks down while still allowing the emergency vehicles to get through. And then a piece that is we've been tuning with the city is the TDM, Transportation Demand Strategies. And this is going to be a critical piece of this. Ample bike parking we discussed, bike share, on-site car share facilities will be provided. Storage at each project for packages, laundry, groceries, so people can take advantage of delivery services, have secure places for those. Unbundled parking, along with the right sizing of the parking. Real-time information on transit arrivals. Curb management, so we make sure that the street space that is provided is available for deliveries, that loading is not blocking the flow of traffic and bikes. And then the next slide. We expect this to be a good amount of families. We're over 50% two-bedroom, so there's on-site childcare, so people can walk to that. There are other family-friendly amenities, storage for strollers, for car seats, for some larger bikes. And then lastly, the on-site transportation coordinator, which is really an important piece. This is somebody whose role is to inform folks as they move, you know, into the site, of all these options they have, to make sure those things are updated and monitored. Importantly, to work with City College to coordinate those services between these two institutions and work with other folks in the neighborhood as well. So that's our package on site, and somebody is looking ahead. We're all looking ahead.
We're trying. Good evening. My name is Mark Drager. I am a transportation planner at the SFMTA in the local street section. I'm also the project manager for what we're calling the Ocean Avenue Safety Project. So I want to outline a little bit of what we're looking to study on this project in the coming years. We're definitely at the early stages of this currently, and we're scoping things out, but we do have a sense of what our key focuses would be. So this is really being birthed out of the Planning Department's Ocean Avenue Corridor Design Study, which came out a few years ago. And it looked at Ocean Avenue, it looked at the intersection of Ocean, Geneva, and then Phelan, now Frida Kahlo. And it created some concepts and some ideas of what this corridor could look like to have it be safer for people walking, and for people bicycling in particular, but also just to pay attention to the fact that this is an important street for people driving through the neighborhood and for transit. It's really how people get in and out. And now that the Balboa Reservoir project is coming out, it really gave us the motivation to bring this project forward and to kind of hone in a little bit on what we'd like to focus on. So the key focus and the key goal for us initially for this project will be to develop alternative concepts for the Ocean Geneva Frida Kahlo intersection. So I'd like to actually jump to the next slide for a moment, and then I'll come back. So these are the two alternatives that the Corridor Design Study came up with. Currently, this intersection is actually two signal systems, so it's essentially two intersections in one which play together. And so we want to look at what it would look like if we combine those two into a single signal system, so Geneva connecting directly with Frida Kahlo, excuse the old naming of the street here, which would have some trade-offs and some benefits. So it would allow us to have a shorter pedestrian crossing, a single crossing, at the south end of the intersection, and bring a little bit of space back for more green space, But then if you look at the other side, on the right side, that would keep the intersection more like it is today. And so you'd still have two separate pedestrian crossings on the south side in a much larger intersection. So for us to be able to really take this to the next level, we want to bring on a consultant team, and we want to look at what the signal systems would look like, what would the trade-offs be for transit delay. You know, we obviously have the Kangle side and then a lot of crosstown buses on Ocean. We have the 43. So we want to look at that. We want to look at pedestrian safety. We want to look at conditions for bicycling and really be able to have some good detail to bring out to the public next year about what the trade-offs would be. Because I don't think that there will be one clear intersection that will come out as, oh, this makes complete sense. The other one is just a horrible idea. I think there's going to be a lot of trade-offs here. So actually, going back to the previous slide now. So in the study area, again, we're focusing on just this intersection for the time being. We think there's enough to break off at this point. And if you think about how Carly set us up, you know, Vision Zero really pushes, especially the local street section and almost everything that we do. And for this entire area, this is where we're seeing, even today, significant number of injury collisions for people walking and people bicycling. And so in terms of putting our energy where it makes the most sense, this is it. And this is also where we're going to have even more people passing through in all modes of travel, coming from the Balboa Reservoir site, trying to get down to Balboa Park Barton Union. So I just want to take note for the time being that since we are just focusing on this intersection, we're not focusing on Ocean Avenue or the pedestrian bridge, which is a whole other animal that perhaps we can get to in the years to come. So jumping forward, one more slide here. So our key questions for analysis here, you know, looking at those two preferred alignments, that's going to take a fair bit of time. As I said, we'd like to come out again next year to the public and have some better concepts to share and some more detail from our investigations. But we also want to look at what we're now calling quick build improvements. And so we're doing these citywide, in particular on the high injury network. So what are some things that we can do that are relatively low cost and quick action today to improve safety and accessibility for folks while we develop this larger project? In terms of the nitty-gritty on our status for the time being, we have $210,000 that we secured over the summer to begin this study, so we're ready to get to work, which is great. We're developing our consultant scope right now, and we're looking to initiate that at the tail end of this year, and we would then begin our outreach in earnest in summer of 2020. So now I'm going to turn over to Michael Rhodes, who will be speaking more to transit improvements forthcoming on Ocean Avenue.
All right, hello. Michael Rhodes with MTA's Transit Division. I'm in the planning group that leads the Muni Forward sort of transit reliability improvements. So first I want to just talk about some of the recent upgrades that Muni has made in the neighborhood, especially around the area of this part of Ocean Avenue all the way to Balboa Park Station. So some recently completed upgrades include Balboa Park Station, the plaza, the station itself, the area. There have been a red transit only lane that was added to speed up transit service there. The plaza itself was upgraded. Sidewalks were widened on Geneva. Lighting was upgraded. There were a number of other changes that happened in the last year or two on in that area. Another change that you have probably noticed if you ride the K is that we now run two-car trains on the K. That brings a lot more capacity to the corridor in general, but you will notice that they're locked as they get to Ocean Avenue. So, you know, so it's helping people get kind of from downtown through West Portal and St. Francis Circle, but because of some of the right-of-way constraints right now, we can only do one-car trains on Ocean. Third one is we extended the 28R, the rapid service along 19th Avenue, here to Balboa Park Station. That was implemented in 2016, so that now connects kind of the west side, the Sunset, and Richmond District here to Balboa Park Station area. And the 29 Sunset was also rerouted a couple years ago to serve Ocean Avenue directly. So we're also looking into further transit improvements beyond what we've completed in response to what we've heard from the community and interest in really upgrading transit in this neck of the woods, especially with some of the development happening. So, you know, we have some near-term improvements that we're looking at, and we have some longer-term improvements. And we're, you know, just this map you're looking at here is a map of our kind of what we call our Muni Forward program. That's our program to upgrade the reliability and the speed, travel time on some of our most heavily used Muni routes. So you'll kind of see a lot of the lines that really make up the bulk of our, you know, it's about 70% of our ridership is represented by these 16 or 17 lines here, and we're looking at things like transit-only lanes, we're looking at things like signal timing that helps speed up transit, we're looking at improve stops and other elements that help, but also pedestrian safety. So when we do a corridor like, Haight Street, or eventually when we come to Ocean Avenue, we really look at pedestrian safety as part of that as well. Kind of speaking to the near term, we're looking at some near term improvements on the K. That's that K, it's kind of cut off on the bottom. It's that little dot right near the reservoir site. We're looking at ways that we can deal with the issue of delay that's caused by left-turning vehicles, especially the K as it makes its way through this neck of the woods gets kind of backed up by sharing that track lane with left-turning vehicles. So we're going to see if we can do some things in kind of the next year or so, or at least identify solutions in the next year or so to help move the K through this area a little faster, more reliably. Longer term, there's that sort of dotted line along what is Ocean Avenue down there where it says K Ingleside Muni Forward Project. We're looking at, planning kind of in the 2020 through next year and starting some kind of targeted outreach the next year along a bigger Muni Forward project that would focus on Ocean Avenue. And the goal is really to have, two-car train service on Ocean Avenue. So right now we've got the one car and the second one's locked up. Can we get to the point where we can make some of the changes necessary to get two cars out there? There's a lot of challenges to that, and we have a lot of analysis to do in terms of understanding of how that would work, and eventually there'll be a lot of outreach on it if we were going to pursue that. But it is the goal to really anticipate the larger amount of people using the K in the future by having more capacity. And, in addition to that, we'd be looking at things like pedestrian safety improvements, as we always do with Muni Forward, things like bulb outs and other targeted improvements to address pedestrian safety issues. So as I mentioned, we're currently looking to start outreach on that project kind of on a targeted basis, along with, analysis and further understanding of what it's going to take to do that over the next year or so. So that concludes the Muni Forward piece.
Okay, I'll just wrap it up with a couple long-term things that are outside of the kind of MTA bucket. Connect SF, if folks aren't familiar with that, that is a multi-agency collaborative process, and its goal is to build an effective, equitable, and sustainable transportation system for the future of San Francisco. And there are two main components to it. There's a transit corridor study and the streets and freeway study. And those are just getting underway. Both studies are just getting underway, and there will be outreach notifications about that outreach coming soon. The second project, I think folks are probably somewhat familiar with here, is the I-280 off-ramp study. And one of the results of that is that on the Ocean Avenue intersection, to build a T intersection on that. And the construction is right now expected to begin around 2021, pending Board of Supervisors approval of the process. And I just wanted to kind of bring it back to what we're all here for, that we've kind of gone down deep into transportation, and just to kind of remember what the project is overall and the overall benefits of the project. So again, we're using public land for affordable housing, we're building housing that is near all of this transit that we've been discussing, provides new parks and open spaces, and all of these people really help support the local businesses. And again, a reminder of the timeline. We're right now in this phase here, end of 2019, and doing the major part right now is response to comments on the CEQA analysis, as well as continuing design work. So that's our presentation. Thank you very much.
How are you doing with the transit ranking? Do you need a break?
Are we just going until 7:30?
Probably a little bit longer.
No, then I need a break.
Okay, let's do a quick round around the committee, if anybody has any comments. Comments about transportation?
I have a question, Amanda.
Yes?
I have a question of you. I only have two questions. One of you and one of Michael Rhodes. Amanda, you did an analysis of the 1550 proposal and of the 1100 proposal, and you saw the DSEIR that those were both considered proposal. Is that correct?
Correct, yes.
Did you see in the DSEIR that there was a proposal that was analyzed with respect to the reduced density of 800 units?
Yes.
Did you do an analysis of that at all?
We did not.
But you would agree, would you not, that with a reduced density, the impact would be reduced?
For the non-CEQA analysis, we did not identify any impacts. The analysis is for informational purposes. So I could say that there would be fewer trips generated, and that would likely lead to less delay at the intersections. Yes.
Okay, then the only other question, thank you, that answers my questions. The only other question I have is of Michael Rhodes. Thank you for your analysis. I think I understood it all, but I had one question. President Norman Yee has said many times, both in these meetings and in other meetings, that he supports putting the K streetcar underground. Is that part of your analysis? And is that even in the cards, doing something like that to solve our transportation problem on Ocean?
So anything that would kind of be underground would be a much, much longer term process. What we're looking at is more like surface improvements, something we can deliver in the next kind of 5 to 6 years. Subways just tend to be 20-year, 30-year projects, so that would be a little further out. We could have somebody who's looking at our broader Connect SF program, which is looking at subways and where they could go, perhaps come and share more information, but my analysis is more focused on near-term surface improvements.
Okay, I do have one other question. I was present before the Planning Commission when one of the commissioners stated that she would not send her child on the K streetcar in front of Aptus because of some problems on the landing there. And she said, used a word that I won't use, about the transportation system in the city. Can you comment on that?
So, yeah, we're definitely aware of some of the issues where the streetcar platforms are not as long or as wide or as kind of protected with barriers as we'd like them to be. And improving that would be something we do as part of the Muni Forward program, for sure. So having a safe place to step off of the platform is definitely part of the program.
Those are all my questions.
Thank you for this. I had some for you as well, so you might as well just stay there right now. And actually, I want to piggyback off my colleague's question about undergrounding, because I know that there's plans for the M to go underground. And is that, I mean, I don't know if the K is going to be incorporated and that's going to be closer to San Francisco State.
Yeah, there has been some sort of initial studies of looking at taking the M underground. To put it in context, that's a multi-billion dollar project that's quite far out. I think that the Connect SF study, again, would be the appropriate place to kind of learn more about what other corridors might be coming in the future. Certainly taking kind of a citywide look at that as part of the planning department and MTA partnering on that study. I'm not sure if the K specifically is part of that, but certainly it's taking a broad look across the city at a number of lines.
Okay, and I'm not sure if you can answer this question, but the SFMTA outreach starts in the summer of 2020. And what is the projected timeline for that to be done?
So I think we're still kind of figuring out when our outreach will start, because actually we have a lot of analysis to do in 2020 to see how sort of in detail what we need to do to make safe stops for two-car trains particularly. But we're kind of looking to have more targeted stakeholder outreach during the next year or so, so in 2020. I would expect that it would still be, you know, we usually do a year of robust outreach for a project of this scale, so I don't think we would be expecting to kind of come to our board before, you know, 2021 time frame for final approvals.
Okay, and I'm not sure,
if I may, sorry. Yeah, the summer 2020 outreach was for the Ocean-Geneva-Frida Kahlo intersection. So that's the point at which we feel like we will have vetted these two alternative concepts for the intersection sufficiently to be able to come to the public and share what we've learned and get their feedback.
And
so two separate efforts.
And you also wanted to see if there were possible short-term ones just to try out? Is that
short-term safety changes,
what we
call quick build improvements, correct? Yeah.
Okay. And well, while you're still there, I don't know which one of you can best answer this one, or maybe not either of you. I wanted to also know about the intersection signal timing proposal, the modifications that might improve how people get through Ocean Avenue, and that would seem counter to Vision Zero. I mean, just, I'm not a transportation planner, but it sounds like it would be counter to Vision Zero.
I'll take that question, Carly Payne from SFMTA. When we reviewed the work that Kittleson did, I think everything that was shared is accurate in terms of what is possible in delay reduction, but you're absolutely right, there are trade-offs. And both deprioritizing pedestrians, but also there's a trade-off between extending the signal on Ocean to move trains and cars on Ocean and the impact on transit that runs on Frida Kahlo. And so we would have concerns about the delays to our buses on Frida Kahlo as the result of that. And so, you know, it's more complicated than just extending a green light.
I know you said there was trade-offs, but
yeah.
I was wondering.
That's a good example.
Okay. Run over a few people versus faster traffic down Ocean. Okay, and then last I had a comment, and I'm sorry to hear that the shuttle is not cost effective. I think that was everybody's number one hope, or at least what I heard from the audience, that that might be one of the bigger solutions that we would have. So I am sorry to hear about that, and I would like some more information on that. And I guess alternatives to that too. You mentioned like some last mile passes or something like that, and I'd like to know more about that.
I just wanted to echo the shuttle. I was really disappointed to hear that that was not going to happen. I think about a lot of the local colleges and universities here. They do offer shuttle services, and those are so key for commuters, especially with parking going away. I wonder if we could have a pilot program where we just test it for 1 year to see what that looks like. Another thing about Muni is it's just not reliable. You know, the other day it took me 2 hours to get home when it's usually a 30-minute commute. So I feel like a shuttle service can be aligned with the class schedule of City College, right? So that you're running every hour when classes are getting out so that students can safely take BART home. So I really do hope that we look at that prospect of having a shuttle service again. Thank you.
Anybody have a second?
I also echo the shuttle comments, but I'm also very supportive of some of the alternatives that were kind of mentioned, including the transit subsidy. I think that there is a lot of overlap with some of the Muni buses, but there's just a lot of reliability issues there. So I also wanted to make comment in terms of the walkability between City College and Balboa Park. It's been brought up a few times. That's just not a very comfortable walk, and what can be done, what kind of investments should be made there to either widen the sidewalk, add bike lanes, and add different types of multimodal transportation options for people, because I think a lot of people that will be moving into these apartments or condos and housing will be using a little bit more of a shared mobility model, so including that I think is really important. Addressing that in the future for some of these options is would be useful, I think, for everyone to know.
I have two questions. My first question is towards SFMTA. When do you expect to have regular two-train KT trains on Ocean Avenue? Because it really needs them between 6 and 9 or 6 to 10 a.m. and then 4 to 8 p.m. because there's so many people that use that line. And then the second question is, have you considered doing staggered trains that bypass certain underground stations, especially in the morning commute, to get downtown faster?
Okay, so the first question was about the two-car trains and when we'll have them more regularly. So, you know, about a year or so ago, or roughly, I think we started running the two-car trains you know, on the K line, and which is interlined with the T3rd as well. And but you know, because of the short platforms on Ocean, we don't open that second door on Ocean, so it is kind of you're not quite getting the full benefit if you're getting on here at Ocean Avenue. You know, it's going to take this Muni Forward program coming through and looking at the design of the islands and lengthening some of them if possible to really make it possible to have safe two-car service on the K Line on Ocean Avenue. So, you know, and to do that is a pretty big change to the streetscape, and we'd really have to go through, and we'll go through a analysis and outreach process before we kind of dive into that, because we need to do it right. So, you know, it's probably going to still be several years before we're able to have, you know, that second car door open and do that safely and do it right. So, you know, in terms of the kind of skip-stop service, I will say we're finally having the luxury now where we have more trains than we're getting to the point where we're starting to have more trains than we absolutely need just to meet our minimum service levels. And as we get to that point and as we start to kind of refill some of our other resources that we need to put service on the street, we're able to try different things a little bit more. We were a little constrained for a lot of years because we only had enough trains to do the absolute minimum service pattern. I don't know if that means skip-stop service necessarily, but in terms of trying more creative service patterns, I think we are starting to look at some of those options. So, you know, we'll probably have more to say about that soon.
I have several questions for four of the speakers. I'll start with Amanda. Okay, first of all, I'm the SNA representative, and I want to stress that the Bell Reservoir Committee for SNA is very strongly behind a shuttle. And just to speak in terms of distance, people who are living in the far northwest portion of the Bell Reservoir have an additional quarter of a mile to walk, and that can, you know, over to Frida Kahlo to catch what you consider to be adequate public transportation. For some of those people, that's going to make a difference to them. They're going to take a TNC instead of getting on the 43. And to have a shuttle may be a breaker for some people, that's going to make a difference for getting people out of their cars, out of TNCs, which are just as good as private cars in terms of clogging up the streets. So I just want to emphasize that SNA is behind that. And I know it's going to make a difference to City College students as well. We support City College.
Okay, thank you for the comment.
Okay, I have an additional comment. You know, because of vehicular traffic having only two outlets from the Belmore Reservoir site, I also want to put a plug for having vehicular traffic at San Ramon, which the initial transportation analysis in 2015 identified this as a way to display some of the congestion at Lee and onto Frida Kahlo, and yet it's not being seriously pursued as far as I'm able to tell, and I don't understand why.
The DSEIR did evaluate a San Ramon access alternative.
And they said it would make a difference. It would mitigate some of the congestion at the avenue.
The significant impact findings were the same for that alternative.
All right, thank you. I have a question for Wade, please. On slide number 5, the study area that you used does not include the intersections of Judson and Genesee and Forrester and Genesee. These are, for anybody who lives in the neighborhood, people coming up in on cars on Frida Kahlo, right on Judson, left on Forrester is a way they get to Monterey Boulevard and then to the freeway. I don't understand why that was not included in the study area initially for CEQA, and also not for the transportation study, which only evaluated Ridgewood and Monterey. You know, and that was, that's not your bailiwick, but that for anybody who lives in the neighborhood, Genesee and Forrester are how people get to Monterey, not Ridgewood. So why wasn't Forrester included in the study area?
So we select, thanks for the question, we select intersections based on an estimate of where we think trips are going to go and where the most impacts are going to go. We don't select every single intersection in the entire Sunnyside or Park area or Ingleside or Westwood Park. We select intersections that are representative of where we think impacts are going to occur. if you commented on this, on the draft EIR, which there's lots of comments, and I'm not sure I fully read them all, we will be responding to those comments fully in our response to comments.
Yeah, that's the route of the 43.
Okay.
It's down Genesee and up Forester. So
yeah.
It's also the route of cars. It's how cars get to Monterey because they're going to the freeway. They're not going at Ridgewood. They have no, you know, they're not going westward, they're going eastward. So it really, you know, was noted as being left off of an important transit route for cars and for the bus.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I have a question for Michael. I'm a bicyclist, I also use bike share. The bicycle station at Balboa Park Station is in absolutely the wrong place, and there is no way any sane bicyclist would use that between City College or the Balboa Reservoir and the Balboa Park Station. It's not on the bike route, and it's at the back of the plaza. I mean, how is that, why isn't it on Ocean, which is the bike route? Why isn't it integrated into the bike network, and why isn't it accessible?
So, Mark may be able to answer that since he's more involved with the bicycle planning side of things.
So again, yeah, I work on the little street, so we work on bicycle safety issues. I'm not privy to the exact siting details of why they put the bike share station as it sits, but that certainly is something that we can look into. I know they're looking at a host of things in terms of location. So that's something that we can definitely circle back on.
I would bicycle on
answer.
Geneva if you paid me. So it should be on Ocean, which is where the bike route
right.
is.
Right. Neither would I. I would
yeah.
be on Ocean myself.
Yeah. It's, okay.
I'll circle back with the response.
Mark, can I also ask you another question?
Of course.
Okay, I'm going to forget that. Thank you. All right, thank you very much.
Hi, this is Howard Chung. I'm a bicyclist as well, and coming from the BART station, the Balboa BART station, up to Ocean, there's just no good way. So you either go to Geneva, as Amy was talking about, which is very dangerous, or you go on Ocean. But how do you cross over to the right side from the Balboa BART? So just wondering, those two scenarios, does it take into account safe biking lane on Ocean, on Geneva, and on Frida Kahlo way? That's the first question. Yeah, go ahead.
So we know that there are a lot of issues on Ocean Avenue and on Geneva and then at the intersection itself that were identified in the corridor design study. We really think that in terms of just breaking off something of that effort that would give us the most bang for our buck and allow us to focus and hone in, it's the intersection. But we do acknowledge that there are more needs on Ocean in particular. In particular for bicycling, where there is an eastbound bikeway, and it's unprotected, and there's nothing in the westbound direction. So, while unfortunately we don't have anything to share today in terms of the planning efforts for that corridor, it is something that our agency will continue to look at.
A second question. I know there's a lot of assumptions that go into the conclusions on these reports. For example, shuttle is not cost-effective, or it's repeating what the Muni does, but I'd be curious, and it's probably in the report itself, but what are some of those assumptions that lead to that conclusion? Number of estimated riders, for example, frequency of the shuttles versus frequency of the Muni bus, need a little bit of detail. And same comment as respect to traffic being delayed maximum of 70 seconds. And I know that you said that it could increase things exponentially because of that 70 seconds at one spot could dovetail into other delays. But what are the assumptions that go into that?
Sure. So great questions. And starting with the shuttle analysis. So we developed a route that would take approximately 30 minutes per run. So that's one full loop. And that includes dwell times of about 1 minute at each stop. And it includes a layover of about 10 minutes for each hour of service. And so to provide service equivalent to existing Muni service and buses to between the City College Terminal and BART Station operate at least every 8 minutes during the peak periods. We would need a minimum of 3 shuttles operating to provide that level of service. So while I didn't catch your name, while Amy's comment about people in the northwest corner, while it being a longer distance for them to walk, we also looked at average walk times. And so that's an average from the center of the site to compare average walk times with average transit travel times on the shuttle to get a sense of desirability of the shuttle. And so we based the ridership estimates on that level of desirability. So would people actually get out of a TNC or a single occupant vehicle to take the shuttle? And so we built a model and we looked at different shuttle operating scenarios. So different numbers of vehicles operating, different headways, different levels of service. And we ended up coming to the conclusion that to provide service at a similar comparable level of quality to the existing Muni service, we'd need at least 3 shuttles in operation during the peak periods. And a lot of that detail is in the report, which is available to you. For the assumptions on the vehicle traffic analysis, we used a tool called Synchro to actually model traffic conditions. We collected intersection turning movement counts at all of the locations shown in the slide Wade showed previously for the CEQA analysis, but we took a subset of those to evaluate the corridor travel times. So we looked at the existing traffic volumes and then the PLUS project traffic volumes. To get the PLUS project traffic volumes, we estimated the project-generated vehicle traffic, and we looked at trip distribution on the surrounding roadways to assign vehicle trips to the roadways. And then we looked at each intersection, the PLUS project traffic. And putting those numbers into Synchro along with the signal timing provided by MTA, we came out with the level of service and the vehicle delay at each of those intersections. Does that answer your question?
Okay. And then a follow-up. So the conclusion was the money for the shuttle is better spent elsewhere. Is the developer saying that that's money that they're going to contribute perhaps in terms of investments towards city streets or other infrastructure to make transit better?
So a commitment has not been made. I'll also say one thing about the cost of the service, and that is that the cost that we put out there, about $1 million, is based on operating, maintenance, employee costs. It doesn't consider things that could also affect cost, like the regulatory requirements of transit stops or the labor requirements for unions. So that cost could increase, quite a bit if further evaluation was made. In terms of the developer's commitment, they are, maybe they should speak to this a little bit more.
Sure. So, yeah, we've committed to a whole lot of things. One of the things we've talked about is the transportation impact fees that the project will pay are almost or over $10 million. And so there's a lot of funds coming from the project to try to solve a lot of these problems. And those, obviously they go to MTA, and MTA decides where those dollars are spent. But this, the ongoing every year thing was something we've always said the project can't afford. So it's not like, oh, great, we found $1 million to spend elsewhere. There were some other, I think Amanda's report says there are other, if this money was available, there are better ways to spend it. But that doesn't, without that, I don't think, we haven't said that money's available to spend, unfortunately. If it was This would be easier to solve.
Okay, I'll be quick. Just on a real basic level, if you walk down to the BART station right now, it's just absolutely creepy. And I almost feel like we need to have public works here saying, well, how come we can't address those sidewalk eaves? Why can't we get the low-hanging vines cut? Why can't we get the overhanging stuff taken? Why can't we improve the lighting? I mean, it's stuff that would really improve the credibility of all this effort if something happened right now. I got to walk to the BART station on my way home, and I'm not looking forward to that experience. So I'd love to see something on an immediate basis get done. Maybe that's a question for Public Works.
You always steal my thunder. I have a list of questions here. I'll try not to take too long. I just want to clear up confusion about these proposals, the developer proposal and the extra large proposal, the supersized proposal, 1,500 units. Can somebody explain, exactly what that's about, and which proposal are we actually looking at actually being built? Because this came up in the DEIR, and now we're seeing it in the non-CEQA analysis.
So the environmental analysis looked at the 1550. That's where that number comes from.
Pardon me, I didn't catch that.
I'm going to let, what?
What did you say?
What did I just say?
No.
Oh, just repeat it?
Yeah.
the environmental analysis looked at the 1550 number. That's where that number comes from.
Nobody else is actually looking at that seriously as an actual plan to build. Is that true, or am I wrong?
The developer is not proposing that number.
Okay.
No.
Okay, but nobody is looking at it, is the question. Nobody's looking at it.
Well, the CEQA analysis looked at it to analyze it. So that does look at it, and it analyzes the impacts of that.
And the city requested it, correct?
The city requested it, yes.
Thank you.
So it's basically just to give a sense of scale so that you can see what a lot of units will do and what a fewer number of units and what the actual proposed number of units will do. As in terms of impacts, environmental impacts. That's what we're okay. Just wanted to clear that up because a lot of people think that there's a plan to put up to build 1,500 units.
No, wait, stop there. She said the city has requested that they look at that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The city.
For the CEQA analysis alone. Okay, is that correct?
You mean you don't intend to pursue it?
So during environmental review, Wade Wickrup Planning, we went through a formal scoping process. And the purpose of scoping is to assess, hear from the public, input on what the potential environmental effects would be, as well as potential alternatives. Actually, prior to that period, there was a long public process. And during that, both the scoping process and prior to that process, we heard a desire for more density at the site, and we wanted to make sure that we covered the environmental impacts of that higher density in case decision makers or someone did propose a higher density at the site. So we wanted to clear that, and that's why we're studying it.
Thank you for that. Let's see. When we talk about trade-offs on a street that's a high injury corridor, Under Vision Zero, we've come up with figures that show that, 40% of all injuries happen on small number of streets. And this is one of the small numbers of streets that have a lot of injuries and deaths. Most of them are south of Market, but Monterey Boulevard and Ocean and Geneva and San Jose, I believe, are also high injury corridors. So it's eligible for Vision Zero. Look at it from a Vision Zero point of view. There was a plan to reconfigure Ocean Avenue to continue the plan that was actually finished between in the business district of Ocean Avenue. The nice red lights, the nice blue street lights, and the street furniture and all of that. But it was never continued down to the BART station. And I know there's some plans out that where City College surrenders a little bit of land, gets rid of their big retaining wall, the sidewalks get widened. And so I was hoping to hear tonight about something about how Ocean Avenue would be improved between as a
as Robert was saying, between the reservoir and City College and down to the BART station. So I'm hoping in the near future to be able to hear about how that's going to be improved as well. There's some talk in the non-sequel analysis about right turn lanes at intersections in order to keep the level of service up. Now the CEQA analysis does not include level of service anymore, how many cars you can move through an intersection. But I guess this non-CEQA analysis does, and they, my understanding is that it, the mitigation is to add a right turn lane in some of these, I guess at Lee Avenue, Lee and Ocean, and maybe another place. I'm not sure about my locations, but the problem I see with that is that widening the intersection makes it much more dangerous for pedestrians and much more dangerous for bicycles. And the phrase transit first came up earlier tonight, and I'd like to see that invoked. You know, in some of the streets that you see in the city that have lots of real estate for cars and bicycles and pedestrians, it's pretty easy to say transit first and allocate a lot of space to the buses and to the bicycles and to the pedestrians. But when it's tight like it is here, it's kind of difficult to make that trade-off. But I think that any trade-off we make, it has to be a transit-first trade-off, because that's our charter. And it's been our charter since, it's been in the charter since 1974, I believe, over 45 years. And it's been challenged several times at the ballot box, always won. So it really is something that we have to think in terms of. And, one of the problems, this ties into the shuttle issue. If the shuttle is not a good idea because it's redundant with the bus system, my biggest problem, anecdotally, personally, taking any of those buses up from the BART station or from Mission Street, is that you get stuck in car traffic. The buses take forever to get up here because there's thousands of cars in front of you. And it's a crisis of the commons, because you have a situation where people won't take the bus because it's too slow, so they drive, and then they slow the bus down even more. So you have this it's a real problem, and I think it's up to the engineers to try and figure out a way to make the buses actually have a little bit more real estate on the street, even in these tight situations here, and figure out a way to make the buses actually move. And maybe the traffic lights can be actuated by the buses or something, but it's just very slow. The J Church, I spent 10 minutes on it yesterday, waiting to get into the station. I asked the driver what's going on. He said, "See that? That's a red light up there." And it stayed red for a long time. And I don't understand why I would have to, I saw a K go by, I saw a 29 go by, I wanted to get up to the reservoir area, and I couldn't get off the J because we were waiting for that red light to change. So there's a lot that can be done still, and if we're going to not have a shuttle, then we have to have buses that actually work between the station and here. And I realize that there's the 8, the 8X, the 43, the K, the T, they're all there, but they're not fast enough, and because they're competing with the drivers on the street. So, what else do I have here? Yeah, also, it's the same thing on Ocean Avenue for bicyclists. I want to echo what Amy said and Howard. It's really dangerous to ride a bicycle on that street, and we want to make it so that it's safe for the people to send their kids to BART on a bicycle on Ocean Avenue. Can we do that? Can we make it safe for bicycles on Ocean Avenue? We'd like to see that happen. Okay. It's 7:30. If you would like to speak, fill out one of these cards and bring it up to me. And in the meantime, let's take a 10-minute break and let our stenographer have a few moments to stretch our fingers. 10 minutes.
Don't.
Okay, so I am told that we advertised this meeting would be over at 7:30. That's obviously not going to happen. But our recorder here has to be out of here by 8:15. We can let the meeting continue on until about 8:30. To do that, we're probably going to have to keep our comments down to a minute or so. So I will start timing them. I want to have Jen Lowe from Supervisor Yee's office come up first.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for holding this meeting and for all the staff and everyone that presented today. President Yi wanted to be here, but unfortunately he's held up on an event, so he just texted me, and I was just kind of giving him real-time updates of this conversation. I think we just want to put on record, you know, I think we're all really trying to explore the best options possible. We understand this is a big undertaking, and one of the things that we've heard time and time again is this exploration of a shuttle, or more likely the outcome of wanting to ensure that the people living on this property or in the area are going to want to use transit to the point of wanting it to be transit first. And so I think we don't want that to be off the table. We have talked and reiterated that to the city team and the developers team. One of the ideas we have is like, what if it is something more of a private-public partnership in which, you know, it might benefit City College and some of the other properties in the area in which a shuttle can provide more servicing so that we can connect to Balboa Park Station. So I really want to just put that on record. That is really one of the biggest issues that we see as a challenge and a barrier. And the other thing I wanted to note too is that we are going to be sitting down with the MTA team. I'm trying to look at Ocean Avenue more comprehensively. That's part of the problem is that we kind of piecemeal these approaches, and I feel like we have this conversation, it's like Groundhog's Day, we have this conversation time and time again. Would love to find a better way to streamline this, the transit, the walkability, the bike access, and try to have one conversation so that we can think of it seamlessly. That's all I wanted to put on record. Thank you.
Thank you, Jen. Next up, we have Janice Lee.
Hey everyone, my name is Janice Lee. I wear two different hats. So I wear one hat, my day job. I'm the advocacy director of the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition. And I also moonlight as elected official. I am newly elected on the BART board. I was elected last November. And Balboa Park BART station is one of the three BART stations in my district. I live in the Outer Sunset. But Balboa Park, I do represent half of it alongside with Bevan Dufty. So I was here mostly just listening to comments today. I know that these meetings are usually staffed by BART staff properly, so if there's any issues, you know, please just bring them up. People, I've been coming to these meetings for a really long time too, but haven't been for a couple years. So I guess my main two comments, I think, like one, BART stuff, please bring me, you know, I have cards here. You can email me at janice.lee@bart.gov if there are any BART-related issues specifically. And I look forward to continuing to work with the CAC around any BART-related issues. With more of my Bike Coalition hat on, really at the end of the day, I think one of the issues around the shuttle is that if you don't do anything about all of the cars on Ocean Avenue, the shuttle's never going to work, just like how Muni doesn't really work today, just as Chair John, you were mentioning earlier. And if we are going to do anything, we need much more drastic changes, which would be pretty transformative. But also would be things like transit-only lanes. It would be radically repurposing space so that we can get, you know, protected bike lanes or wider sidewalks or work with City College around their master plan. But those are really transformative changes that I know, you know, there is a sort of consensus around that. But that's the level of change that's needed if you want to really make this ultimately a transit-first neighborhood. So I'll leave it at that.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to call four or five names. Ryan Hankman from RKSF. Jennifer Hege from SNA. Just get in line. Rita Evans from SNA. And Aaron Goodman after that.
Thank you. Good evening, Chair Winston, committee members. I'm Brian Hankman. I work at Walk San Francisco, and I'm representing them tonight. Walk SF is the city's only pedestrian advocacy organization working to make sure that we reach our goal of ending pedestrian deaths and serious injuries on our streets and improving our streets and sidewalks so that more people can walk. We recognize the project as a critical opportunity to improve transportation safety in the neighborhood and get more people walking. It's as the largest residential project for the neighborhood. We have the opportunity not only to design streets within the project area and make sure that new residents can get around sustainably and safely, but also think about the tens of thousands of people who are working and living and attending class here and make sure that they can get to BART and City College and shops and home without feeling the effect of transit traffic dangers or creating new ones for them to face. As noted in the presentation from MTA, this project will be located next to some of the city's most dangerous streets. Ocean and Geneva are on the high injury network. The 13% of streets where 75% of crashes that kill people or seriously injure people occur. And we've lost community members, like an 80-year-old woman last April, an ocean just west of the project. We support the project's proposed safety improvements, like the paseos at Brighton and San Ramon. That'll increase connectivity in the 5 raised crosswalks, but we do need to go further. We need to think about things like the supermarket's loading zone, as proposed in the Lee Avenue extension in both options. We'll take careful design. Trucks, and especially truck turning motion, should be thoroughly reviewed at the intersection with pedestrian comfort in mind, and Whole Foods loading issues will only become more urgent of a problem if many more people are walking in this area. Additionally, it may become a very successful pedestrian environment, but it'll also depend on how carefully these details are addressed and how much parking is included in the project. And finally, as noted, with others, we do need to consider the streets like Ocean and Geneva through transformative projects that make it safer to connect to BART and transit. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jennifer from Sunnyside. I just want to ask, is it really 1 minute?
Yes, sorry.
Okay. So I already cut mine way down. So I just want to reiterate what Amy said about traffic. The reason that going down Ridgewood is not adequate, first of all, the study needs to look at Judson because that's where most of the traffic goes. And there's a good reason for that. When you go from Rita Kahlo, turn left on Fled, turn right on Ridgewood. Ridgewood is a very narrow street. And also, there's a huge blind spot coming from Monterey to Flood on Ridgewood, so that turn is really dangerous, so that's sort of a crazy idea. Anyway, but something that should be studied. According to the City College Fares and Peers Survey from March 2019, the amount of time a commute takes was the biggest barrier to transitioning to non-car-related transit. It's also noted in the City College TDM that transportation demand management cannot reduce travel time for alternative transportation modes. TDM measures are not going to solve the biggest problem, which is the time it takes to get from the point of origin to City College and then on to the next destination. Thank you.
My name is Rita Evans. I wanted to address a few different things. I was absolutely shocked to hear that the shuttle has been dismissed. It certainly isn't redundant when we don't have the service to the project site that the shuttle would include. And also, what we're talking about is a free subsidized one, not the Muni system where you pay. And I forwarded information about the Emory Go-Round, the San Leandro Link system, where you have a CBD that's helping to pay for it, the commercial district here. So I think that I'd sure like to see that be pursued. I was also shocked to see in the list of things addressing transportation demand, no mention at all of TNCs, no mention at all of the scourge of Uber and Lyft cars, which will be flooding this area, or how they're going to be accommodated. Nor did I see anything addressing electric scooters and where they're going to be dumped and impeding pedestrian and other movement. So I think there are a lot of things in here that still really need to be looked at. And those are just two of the glaring deficiencies right now. Also, in the parking analysis, just where are the oversupply of parking of cars overnight and during the day? Where are they going to go?
Before Aaron speaks,
I want to call up Kate Pavetti. Jennifer already spoke. How did that happen? Laura Frey. And Harry Bernstein. And
that's from the fourth.
That's from the fourth.
Okay. That is not
enough. Okay.
Aaron Goodman, District 11, former chair on the Balboa Park Station Area CAC, and also member of SF Tomorrow. So we really have to look futuristically at this intersection. I think it's very haphazard to not discuss the pedestrian bridge that crosses Ocean Avenue. That should be a part of any plan due to its age and its condition. I think that the shuttle service that was being discussed not being feasible. We've discussed this many times before at the CAC. There are alternative solutions. It's whether or not we can get all the players on board to solve for it. Part of that includes grade separation. Some of the mention of the tunneling or subway systems that have been discussed on the west side. There are shown diagrams that include the K-line. However, the SFMTA is, I think, way behind the eight ball in terms of coming up with adequate solutions there that are going to link the transportation lines of the K, the J, the M, and the T line at this intermodal hub. This is an intermodal hub. It needs to be considered as such. It has to get the funding and the planning up to speed. Otherwise, we won't see anything improved here. Thank you.
Kate Pavetti and a broken record, of course. First, going to be starting off with, yes, underground decay. It is absolutely essential that we do look at Ocean Avenue transportation issues on a comprehensive basis, and that funding for the feasibility study for underground and decay should be going forward. I know that's a part of this, the Balboa Reservoir, but it will affect us over eventually. The other is accessibility. Accessibility through the shuttle and making sure that all adjacent neighborhoods are connected and connected in a seamless way then to the Ocean Avenues. So we have a comprehensive neighborhood that is without barrier.
Laura Fry, Westwood Park. I just have one comment. The analysis of the parking impact, the figure they used for the lower reservoir just seemed really, really low. From all the meetings I've gone to and the other things that have been brought forward from City College people and stuff, that graph had, I think, 281 at the peak of 1 p.m. was the mass, you know, the biggest parking. And from what I've observed and what I've heard City College people say, that is not the level of parking. There's a lot more cars than 281 in the lower reservoir.
Stephen Martin Pinto, Theodore Randolph, Christine Henson, not speaking yet, and Francine Lofrano.
Steve Martin Pinto, Sunnyside Neighbor Association President and Secretary of Westwood Police Association.
Yeah, that was quick.
You got 5 seconds.
Just want to say a couple of things. I was going to talk about the number of units, but I think one of the most important things we can do in this neighborhood or and for this project is to put the K underground. We have to do it. We got no choice. I mean, if we really want to give people viable transportation options, we got to make transportation attractive. And I think putting the K underground, putting the M underground, linking the K with the T out at Geneva and Bayshore is going to be a huge, huge step forward in taking cars off the road, making it safer for bikes, making the Vision Zero program actually work, which is what everybody wants, and not to mention the fact that it'll improve traffic flow, reduce carbon emissions and all that stuff. So I think we really need to look at that very, very seriously, not just talk about it, but actually start planning for it like as soon as possible. Thanks.
Hello, I'm... Okay. Theodore Randolph. Greta Thunberg has been going around shaming adults for doing nothing about climate change. And for this transportation related thing, what we should be doing is doing a lot less driving. Dispute with the characterization of the project that the more people you have, the more traffic you get. The more residents, the more traffic. And that's wrong. What generates traffic is free access to roads and parking, subsidized parking. So another aspect of the traffic is that the insufficient housing in San Francisco is creating traffic, enormous amount of traffic from hypercommutes outside San Francisco for people getting driving to jobs in San Francisco. So in the future, it should be transit-oriented. Greta Thunberg is one who's going to inherit. So we should be getting rid of cars. Right, thank you.
Johansson. Skyline College runs two shuttles from BART costing $597,202 for 2 years' time. Why didn't they examine running a shuttle down San Jose Ave, up Judson, and to the City College parking lot? That route would surpass the other bus route, especially if the new acceptable delay for buses going up Ocean Avenue is 19 minutes before they're called late. TDM demands a 15% reduction in car use, but it's going to take years to even unlock the doors of a second Muni bus. So what options are they giving to City College students? And it sounds like no option other than not going to school. And how does this project expect to earn a 15% improvement in transportation so they can qualify for a 900 AP allowance? I don't get it. Thanks.
Hi, Francine Lafrano, Westwood Park. I just have a thought about the Vision Zero. There's a lot of distracted drivers and pedestrians, people with earphones on, other people on their phones, whether they're walking or driving. I bike, I drive, I walk, and it's always really amazing to me about how many people aren't following the traffic signals. So I'd like to ask or suggest, if you haven't done it already, that the Vision Zero incorporates a public education campaign, because, you know, when I'm walking, I see the red hand and I stop, and people keep going, and I think there's people, a lot of pedestrians have the idea that they have the right-of-way, but they don't always have the right-of-way depending on what the hand signals are saying, and especially when you're proposing right-hand turns, you know, people are going to be turning across, people trying to cross, and so I think there really needs to be a way better public education campaign for the pedestrians, you know, because they have within their power not to get hit as well by a car. So I'm not saying either one is right or wrong. I'm just saying that there has to be a little more education. I think that people need to stop when they see the hand, the red hand. Especially because you're promoting walking so much, so I think it's a good idea.
Is there anyone else who would like to fill out a card? They're probably a little faster than I expected.
I'll fill one out after.
Hello, Corey Smith. I'll just speak as an individual since we kind of stick housing focused, but listening to a lot of this, and I know for all of our members that have been on this, we've talked about this topic specifically being so, so important. I would love for the train to be underground on Ocean Avenue. I'm guessing that's a $5-7 billion project, and dealing with the Central Subway, it's also probably a 15 or 20 year project. A shorter term, about half the cost, as another option, could be putting it above the street, 15 feet above. There's beautiful examples of this done all over the world with art and greenery. You can put protected bike lanes underneath it that could be covered from the rain so people would be able to operate on bikes all year round as well if it is raining. So we can be creative. I also think we need to not forget some of these simple things that work really well. Better lighting will do a ton to improve the experience and doesn't cost a crap ton of money that we don't have. So be aspirational, and let's also make sure we have simple improvements that do make a difference. Thank you.
Yeah, Harry Bernstein. So one thing, is the media representative still here?
Yes.
Okay. So I would like to ask the Muni representative tonight to speak to the question. I mean, they said regarding the undergrounding of the K that that's a big deal. It's separate from this, but there's been a lot of input about the value of that. So what would it take to accelerate the priority for evaluating the need for that for city benefit as well as making this project viable. I'm also wondering about the shuttle and the combination of how many spaces are available. Are they really evaluating the needs, assuming that these the forthcoming buildings at City College will be built, or is it only for what is going on now?
Is this the
I guess that's it for a public comment. Seeing them, we'll move on to a quick round robin of the committee. Does anybody have any responses to anything they heard tonight? I'm looking for a...
Excuse me, could we possibly ask the uni representative to answer that?
We got such, you got a few minutes. Is that okay? Please.
So I think the question was about sort of the what it would take to underground the K and...
No, what would it take to get that going, to get it be a city priority?
And the second question was, as I understand it, about have you taken into consideration the development by City College of the PEG, the STEAM, and the 500 units of student housing?
For the shuttle? And somebody else will have to answer that one. But I'll start with the K. So I'm not directly involved in this study, but there is a study called Connect SF, which is looking at what would it take to underground or above ground or basically have grade separated transit within a lot of corridors in the city. And they're really that's something you can look up. We can have them share more information, but that is looking at prioritizing across the city. I know the M line has been a high priority to look at, but they're really looking at all the corridors. I don't have a robust answer on what the status of undergrounding the K is, but I would say that is probably a, you know, multi-decade, multi-billion-dollar project if it were to happen. So we definitely would want either way to be making near-term surface improvements. That said, there are ways to weigh in on the Connect SF process, absolutely, and share the importance of that.
If I can just add, I think what might be helpful as a follow-up is if we send to this body, or perhaps if that's not appropriate, city can represent at the next meeting what the SF, what the Connect SF process project and process is, and when public engagement is happening, on what issues, how corridors are being considered. We just are not those representatives here tonight, but I'm happy to make sure that you get that information and you get that information.
I think his question was, in the transportation analysis, has anybody considered the development, the substantial development proposed to start in 1 year or 2 years by City College of the East Basin? That's the question I think he asked.
Wade Wickerif, San Francisco Planning. In the CEQA analysis, we did consider the cumulative impacts of the City College Facilities Master Plan combined with Balboa Reservoir project.
Thank you.
No more public comment. Okay, public comment is closed. Is there anybody on the committee who would like to follow up with any comments? Alrighty then, I guess I will call this meeting closed. Is there anything else that we need to do?
Can we announce what the next meeting is? Just
remember. We don't know. Is there a date set for the next meeting in December?
Yes, and that's the December 9th.
Okay, December 9th, 6 o'clock, right here. Didn't know that. I do have item 5 here, which I neglected. General public comment for anything that's not on the agenda tonight.
I have an answer.
This is my last meeting. I've enjoyed the process and sitting on this board, and thank you all. And, moving on.
Howard, we'll miss you.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you for all the work you've done here. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Me, Bridget, Christine, and you two, Jen, are the original groups in the party.
All right, and looking forward to a City College station one day. Wait.
One more public comment.
You're slipping in under the wire there.
I'd like to know what the developers are proposing to do to ensure that noise and air pollution will not cause mental and physical health issues to children. The draft EIR indicates that noise and air pollution will exceed existing standards, and mitigation measures that were suggested could not bring the excess within standard limits. We know childcare, daycare, and child development facilities exist at every entry and exit point for the reservoir, and Reardon High School students will also be subject to these impacts. What is the plan to protect children in the area during construction?
All right, I want to thank everybody for coming down here. We don't always all agree, but we all love our neighborhood and our city, and it's really great to see everybody turn out at these meetings. Hope everybody leaves the room here again tomorrow. Close the meeting and hear about it.
Thank you.